evening, Demon fans, and welcome back to the Demonland podcast. My name is Andy, and cancel your trips to the snow and the south of France and clear your calendars for September. The demons are back as they took their first tentative steps into a new era under new coach Stephen King and notched up a memorable first round win over the Saints. Joining me tonight to discuss a famous victory at the MCG is George. Good evening, George.
Good evening, Andy. Good evening to Bin Man. Good evening to all our listeners. Well, wasn't it great? Couldn't have a better weekend to start, to have the weekend, although it was the end of it. The Demons win, Collingwood lose, Essendon are belted by 10 goals, and if bloody Tom Lynch could kick straight, Carlton would be looking for a new coach by now. Good, almost perfect.
And St Kilda lost as well. Even though that's part of the Demons winning, it was great to see them max out their credit cards and take the loss as well. And also joining us to discuss a miraculous round one win is B-Man. Good evening, B-Man.
Good evening, Andy. Good evening, George. Good evening, Demonlanders. It was just awesome yesterday. What a beautiful day to go to the footy. I love Melbourne in autumn. It was still a little bit humid, didn't even get cold later on. It was just hats off to the footy club. They put a real emphasis on making it an event, and I walked around the outside. There was heaps of stuff for kids and, you know, the activation zones and all of that. And, even my curmudgeonly old, I can't believe they're going to play songs. Still, it was quite fun hearing Rock the Casbah six times. And I got some suggestions for, songs that they could choose that maybe you could sing along with. But it was an awesome day at the footy. Exciting, it was just terrific. But I have to say, I said to my friends at the footy that, I'd gone into it thinking losing doesn't matter. But 20 minutes into that last quarter, I tell you, I would have been devastated all over again if we'd lost that game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We don't have this tabled for discussion, but we may as well talk about it. You mentioned the songs after the goals, and probably the demographics of Demonland are a bit older, and I'm sure they don't like change or the Americanization of sports. So what did you guys think of that? That's the way it's going to go. It's not going to go away, so there's no use complaining about it. What are your thoughts on that?
The younger generation do appreciate it, and unfortunately we're not going to be around forever. So if that's what helps to get them through the gates, well, so be it. But it would be nice at halftime if you can talk to your mates without the blaring of and as one of our posters pointed out, it's okay at the MCG because the noise actually does escape, but it's far too heavy at an indoor stadium like Marvel. Really needs to be turned down. You do like to go to the footy to talk to your mates and catch up with them and things like that. Need to be listening to songs that somebody else might have chosen that you really don't want to listen to in the first place.
I actually, funnily enough, I didn't mind the song so much after a goal, because particularly Rock the Casbah. That was a bit neither here nor that. It was a bit of fun. What I hate is just how loud the volume of the ads and the music beforehand and at halftime. That's the bit that I really dislike. And I don't reckon that's an old curmudgeon thing. It's just bloody loud. And as for the songs, though, if it's about the kids, I guess the question I'd have is, who did they ask? Like, they say this is for, to increase the, crowds or make it a – but who did they ask whether – it's wanted that, and I don't know whether this is an AFL thing, to be honest, or whether this is a Melbourne initiative.
No, it's the AFL, because I saw other teams produce their lists of goals for players.
Okay, right. Well, so the must be, question that must ask I would have every is, player. The AFL, they take the worst things about American sport and leave some of the best things. And who did they actually ask? Where's the evidence? Like, I'm not again the having songs. Although, for God's sake, if it's about bring kids to the game, you want to have songs a bit older than Rock the Casbah's 1979, although, interestingly ironic because it was about the Iranian Revolution in 1979. But, you want to, none of the songs they chose were from this decade or even the last, you want to, if it's about the kids, well, maybe you know, play a song that an average 15-year-old might have heard, right? Except in their parents'.
Well, the players themselves choose their song.
Yeah, I know. But the question I would have for the AFL is, fine, no worries, you want to do that, but show us the evidences that that it will increase crowds. Because the AFL, unless I'm going crazy, for the last 3 years have done nothing but bloody boast about their record crowds. Now, there hasn't been songs after goals the last 3 years. So, you know, where's the evidence that it will actually increase the crowds? But
I also don't think I've seen anywhere where the AFL has said we're doing this for crowds, because who's going to say, I'm not going to the footy because they don't play a song after a goal? I don't think that's a consideration.
And then one of the songs was Sweet Caroline, which they did get a sing-along, but Brisbane used that.
Yeah,
there's a bazillion songs out there. You don't have to use one Brisbane already uses.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll move on for that. The other thing, I saw people were upset that we went out of the other rooms. Does anyone know why we went out of the other rooms?
I was upset.
Do you care just because of tradition?
No, I was upset because where I sit is directly above directly above our interchange bench, and I could see the information on the boards and look down, and I couldn't see it.
Maybe they moved because of you being mad.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. It doesn't bother me. They did it there was a rationale.
Someone said, I read, but I don't know if that's the reason we did, but someone on Demon Lab mentioned that it's a bigger rooms, those ones. So maybe the coach said, I want the players getting the best pre-game workout, whatever they do, and have the most room. So if they think that's going to help them, well, you know.
Totally. It's our ground, for God's sake. We can do what we want. We can choose whichever room we want. It's not only our ground. We were the home team on our ground, so we can go wherever we should take both rooms.
And I believe I believe that along the sides of the race they have all that digital stuff. I'm not sure if that's all on the other one as well, so maybe they wanted all that whiz bang for, you know, when they come out they've got the thing, so it's from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, they said something about that as well.
All right, well, let's get into it. Each week I ask our loyal listeners to support the podcast and leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts, and we truly appreciate that feedback. And as a token of our gratitude, we give a well-deserved shout-out to those who take the time to share those reviews. And that Kevin Spencer writes, excellent podcast for Demon supporters, sharp analysis, strong chemistry, great club insight, and plenty of passion. It feels like a proper footy discussion from people who truly understand the angst of being a D's fan. Always worth a listen. Well, thanks for that, Kevin. Much appreciated. Keep that feedback coming in 2026. Simply leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts, and we will give you that shout out on the show. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Leave us feedback, ask a question, share a comment for the show. You can do that by jumping into our weekly podcast post, send us a DM, and don't worry, we won't read out your real name on the air. You can listen to the Demonland podcast on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or any of your favorite podcasting apps. Just search for Demonland podcast and subscribe. And if you want to connect with fellow D supporters from around the world, head on over to demonland.com, sign up for free, and join in on the conversation. And if you want to call into the show live, I've got it back. I've got the eSIM into my old phone back. So if you want to give the show a call, you can go to demonland.com, hit the call button, or from your phone, call 0486-387-929. That's 0486-387-929. I'll answer your call, put you on mute, and bring you on when there is a break in the conversation. Having said that, I've done everything possible to prepare for this except connect to the Bluetooth. good fail that was. During the week, you can give that number a call, leave a message, and we'll play it on the show. Don't worry. No human will answer that call. The phone will be switched off. You can also listen to the podcast live each week at demonland.com on Monday nights at 8 p.m. And let's get into the stats file, because as part of our ongoing quest to trim the runtime of the podcast, we've been looking at where we can tighten things up a little. And one segment that naturally comes into focus is Bin Man stats files, not because it isn't a valuable part of the show, but it's become such a substantial one. And it's a big part of what makes this podcast what it is. But it also takes a fair bit of airtime and, just as importantly, a lot of work for Bin Man behind the scenes, especially with the tight turnaround of those Sunday late afternoon games, which we're going to have to probably suffer through a lot this year. So rather than lose it all together, we're going to tweak the format. We'll still bring you an abridged version of the stats file on the main podcast every week. But for those of you who really like to get get into the numbers. We'll also be rolling out a companion podcast during the week with the full-length version of Bin Man Stats Files, and we'll see how it all works out. Maybe we'll end up just going bringing it back or whatever. We'll see how it goes. It actually works out pretty well timing-wise because there'll be a couple of stretches this season where I'm away and unable to host. I've got 3 weeks in April and another two in July, and no, I'm not going to the snow. So much like we did a couple of years ago when I went to the States for a couple of weeks, Bin Man will steer the ship for those weeks with the stats files and maybe a couple of extra topics as well. So yes, in an effort to make the podcast shorter, I've probably just spent far too long explaining why it has to be shorter and made it a bit longer. But the short version is the stats files isn't going anywhere. It's just getting its own stage. So without further ado, take it away with an abridged version of the stats files, Bin Man.
G'day, viewers on the Stats Files front. This is the new disciplined Stats Files.
Let's see how long that lasts, listeners. So.
So the stats that are a big shout out to Willow Ratings. Anyone who's heard the show before will have heard me shout out Willow. But if you don't know Willow Ratings, Google Willow Ratings. There's tennis and AFL, and it's really just simply the best stats spot for all your sort of statistical needs. It's just terrific. There's also a thread which I started yesterday. There's been one every year now for the last two, three seasons, Stats Files 2026. So if you're into sort of analysis of stats and data, Willow puts up the key stats every week. It's terrific. I really like it, and the information that I've speak to today and then going forward through the season is from there. So really, really appreciate the work Willow does, and as I say, anyone who's really interested in sort of discussion about stats, but also like I guess it's sort of that combination of looking at the data and telling us what it about the game and how we play as a team. That's a fantastic thread on the Demonland Footy Forum. And it's particularly interesting this year because of our change to our game plan. So some really fascinating stats. This year, Willow's added three new stats to both the Willow Ratings website, but also in his weekly sort of capture of the key stats. And all three are really important stats in terms of, one, describing the game plan, but also, two, as it turns out this week, interestingly, were really the key factors in why we won. He's added this year retention of kicks into forward 50. So how effectively do we retain the football when we kick it inside 50? Meters gained by kick and handball, and a new one called equity points. Equity points are the player ratings, but you break them up into different categories, and it includes points from winning ball, so contested ball, and points from how your players use the ball. You can aggregate them up into, and that's what Willow's done, aggregated them up into all team equity ratings. And so I'll speak to a little bit about that. Equity points is really interesting in terms of its description, and I'll talk about that in a sec, about how you use the ball and the difference between how footy is in 21 as opposed to now, when winning the ball was really the key, and now it's how you use it. And the data's really sort of reflecting that over the last couple of years. But first of all, the player ratings. Fantastic performance, no surprise. Well, perhaps it is a surprise. Jacob Van Ruin was the top rated player in the game. As people who know, who'd listened to the podcast before, I think the Champion Data player ratings is by far the best measure of a player's performance. It is bang on accurate in terms of it always reflects pretty well what the coaches awards. Top five, top six player ratings at the end of the AFL season, almost always the top five, top six coaches award winners. It is a terrific sort of way of looking at player performance. So our best performer on the day was Van Rooyen. Van Rooyen was his best game of his AFL career, almost unquestionably, 25 match points. To put that into some sort of perspective, he was the fourth highest rated player in the AFL this weekend. This is a little break a few hearts. Number one, any guesses who number one was? It was Track, 33.95. A bit of context, 20 is considered an elite game of footy. Track had 33.95 player rating points on the weekend. Marcus Bondempelli, best footballer in the AFL, in my opinion, was second, 27.6. Caleb Sarong was next, 26.5. And Jacob Van Ruin came in at 25, which was which is awesome. And I think actually this table is missing someone, because Max Hall, he had an amazing player rating. So he was 28.6 for this game. I'd never seen that kid. I couldn't even – he was awesome.
He carved us up. We were not accountable in regards to
– Yeah, we weren't accountable at all. And there's a question later about defence, and I think it really throws into sharp relief. We didn't do anything with him. I could never follow opposition players, and so I didn't even know who he was. But I watched the replay when I got home, and Jesus, he's a solid-looking unit. He reminds me of a young Toby Green. But anyway, I digress. He was brilliant. Brilliant performance. Those player rating thing he had, so the player ratings, all these different categories give a player their ratings. Ball use and winning the ball are two of those things. He had 15 of his points, 25, 15.8 of them was how well he used the ball, and that was his accuracy. By far our best ball user, by far. The next one was Jack Steele, who 9.6. He was our second highest rated player. What a debut for the club. 19.7. I heard him interviewed after the game. He was really, he was amazing. He said he didn't think he played very well, didn't get enough of the pill. And whoever was interviewing him on the ABC said, you know, give it a rest. You were the second highest rated player for the D's. 19.7, super impressive. 15.7 for Maxi. What a brilliant last quarter. His highest quarter rated quarter for the game was that last quarter, 6.5. And he took the high-paid TDK, which was annoying the hell out of me when they're calling that, to the woodshed and back in that last quarter. Took him to places he didn't want to go. Harry Sharp had his best game of footy, arguably in his career, definitely for Melbourne, 13.9. He was fourth. Here's one that really might surprise a few people. Xavier Lindsay was our fifth highest rated player, including an enormous third quarter of 9.2. He had 13.4 player ratings, and Caleb Windsor and Fritter. Down the bottom, Ed Langdon was our lowest ranked player, but a positive is 4.2 player rating. That's not too bad. We had plenty of players in the negative last year. Tommy Sparrow was just above him, and Jake Lever, will talk about his game in a little bit, but he had a good second half, a much better second half, 4.8 in the third quarter, 2.8 in the last quarter, so much better. He had a woeful first half, 0.3 and 0, minus 0.20. So three of those key stats I mentioned, retention of kicks into forward 50, this was critical for us. So this was obviously a big problem for us last year, particularly with track kicking it inside 50. He seems to have sorted that part of his game out. But we had 67.4% of the time kicking inside 50, we retained it inside our 50 compared to their 56. So we walloped them. That was terrific in terms of our ability to retain the ball once we kicked it in 50. Obviously, that, you know, we're hitting up targets. That's a retention. Any shot at goals are retention. Those marks on the lead, it was like, what's happening in Melbourne Footy Club? We're hitting, you know, players are leading into space and players are hitting them. That was brilliant. Meted gained by handballs and kicks is really fascinating. So pretty much the stats were really, when I looked at the stats, our stats versus their stats, they were almost identical across almost everything, except this one, handball meters gained. They had 10 meters. Saints only had 10 meters gained, by handball. We had 231. That's plus 221 meters gained from handball. And that really, that dramatically shows how we are playing those long forward handballs that is an obvious part of King's game plan. They were really on show. I was shocked to see they only got 10 meters, but, you know, it really showed our attacking philosophy of moving the ball forward with those long handballs. Just finally, the equity points. The equity points, as I said, it enables a way when you aggregate all of the player rating points, you can look at across a team. Now, obviously, as Willow said in the Demonland thread that's in, while the total player ratings is not that useful at the team level, is the difference between the two teams, because basically the difference between the two teams is the margin, points margin. The split between pre and post clearance, and in particular the data around ball winning and ball use, can be much more useful. In 25 teams that won in 2025 season, the teams that won the ball use equity won the game at a higher rate. 86% of the time, if you win the ball use equity, you win almost 90% of the games. against ball winning equity, so actually winning the footy, contested footy, 71%. When we won the flag in 21 that season, it was completely the other way around. 79%, if you won the winning, you won 79% of the time teams did if they won that stat, and 86. So there's been an obvious shift in the winning the ball, 79 for ball use, and 86% in 2021. If you could win the ball more often than your opponent, you won 86% of the time. Really shows the shift in the game. And that was fantastic. We're basically the same for ball winning, contested, all the numbers were the same. We're down 4.2 on that. But ball use, 81.7 points to their 68.9. That's manna from heaven for me. We use the ball much better than them, and geez, they turned it over. Some shockers. Just really quickly, 50 points, 52 points from defensive half. That's would be up in our top five from last season. 50 for them, so we gave up, and we scored 70 points on turnover. They scored 56. We defended okay on turnover, but geez, their some of their howlers were shockers, weren't they? Some of their turnovers were Melbourne-esque, I thought. Finally, bang, 10 minutes, Andy. Interesting stat of the week. The most recent Melbourne player to kick five goals at halftime was Jesse Hogan, way back 10 years ago in 2016. Funnily enough, also against St Kilda, you had to go back a decade before that for David Neitz, kicked five goals before halftime in round 10. Also against the Saints. So remarkably, the last three times Melbourne footy, someone at the Melbourne footy clubs kicked five goals before halftime have all been around, against the Saints. But you've got to go back 10 years and 10 years before that. So fantastic performance by JVR, and he can rock the Casbah as much as he wants.
Yeah, it'll be good to hear that song all year. Yeah, what a fantastic game. And B man, 10 minutes, that's remarkable. I look forward to the longer version of that. And anyone who does enjoy the deeper dive into the stats will also like that too. So we'll see how it goes. You know, we're going to play it by ear, but it's a good opportunity to do that because, as I said, I'm going to miss a number of weeks this year of the podcast. Going on holiday with the family, and then I've got a wedding elsewhere. So, yep, can't help it. So this is a good chance to do it because B-Man's going to have to hold the fort. We're going to get now into our listeners' questions. The questions that we get from our listeners on demonland.com, it forms an integral part of this show. It steers the conversation. It lets us know what people want to be talking about. It also helps me in the preparation because it takes a bit of the pressure away of what are we going to talk about this week. Let's get straight into it. Smurf writes, how bloody good is it to finally have a functioning forward line? No more long bombs to the pocket, just players leading up the guts and getting hit lace out in front. 9 goals between our two key forwards says plenty. It can't be much of a coincidence that Roo produces the best haul of his career when he's partnered by a strong, competent key forward like Majacek. You absolutely love to see it. Monocular says, wonderful to have you all back and thanks for what you bring to all of us. I know it wasn't only JVR, but how wonderful having a forward leading into space and for those upfield to honour those leads and kick the ball in front of him instead of on top of his head. If this is due to the new game style, then exciting days ahead. Latrell Cuzzy Pickett, what an absolute ripper AFL debut for a kid whose last game was Glenelg Reserves, and that goal was pure joy and magic. Did quite a bit of other stuff as well. We'll talk about Cuzzy Pickett a bit later. El Diablo 14 says, JVR has arrived. In fact, he never left. Despite the criticism last year, he's one of the most accurate kicks in the league, given the opportunities, and he'll take them. So, George, the forward line finally looked functional. Proper leads, connection between the lines, and JVR and Majacek cashing in with a big haul. Is that just a one-off, or are we seeing the early signs of a completely different forward structure?
There's a couple of things I think have factored into this change, and it's not just structure as such. So I'll work through them. First of all, for those who hadn't seen JVR before this game, he has completely changed his body shape.
Completely.
He's obviously spent a lot more time in the gym. He's much stronger than he was in the past. And the evidence of that is the marks that he took in this particular game. They were one grab.
One grab, beautiful.
One grab, no bobbling around. They just stuck in there. So that's as a result of JVR doing the work over summer.
George, do you reckon he's taller?
I think it's hard to say.
Maybe he just looks leaner. He looks taller.
He certainly looks leaner. I think he's changed. He's put on more muscle but lost weight. He's, as they say, ripped is the word. Yeah. And the result is, like I said, the hands are nice and strong now. So he just doesn't drop them, or he certainly doesn't in this game. So that's the first thing. The second thing was the appearance of Majacek. Apart from the three goals, it's an additional forward who's a real threat to the opposition. Like I said, I hated him when he played at Collingwood, and he did exactly the same in this game. He just keeps going to the right spots and popping up. He's just an old smart footballer who's still got the skills necessarily. And I think apart from his first miss, all the shots were accurate. So
and I think we'll see. I don't know why he didn't have a shot with Fritsch later. That was just stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, my laissez faire, this is all fun and games, was really dropped off at that point.
Could have cost us a bloody win, but anyway.
Yeah. So that's the first thing. The addition of Majacek, big factor. And what I particularly like about Majacek, because he's a natural footballer and knows what to do, go and have a look at Latrell Pickett's first goal. Look who's the player who takes out the St Kilda player that enabled Pickett to go and dance around in the forward line. It was Brody Majacek. So it's been a long time since I've seen someone in the Melbourne forward line actually laying.
Geez, I wish he was two years younger.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yes, that was one thing. Okay. Next thing that's happened is what we saw in the training pre-season was people talk about the forwards leading, into space and all this sort of thing. It's not the forwards leading into space. It's the people up the field kicking to the space that forces the forwards to lead into there and obviously get the marks and the resultant goals. So that's been a big change from upfield from compared to what we had before. Criticisms of Oliver and Petrarca, but they're not great kicks, and it was always kick it to the forward. Now it's kick it to where the forward needs to go. So that's been a dramatic change. Lastly, the other thing that I think we need to appreciate is while we got 9 goals from JVR and Majacek, the only other forward who contributed was Fritsch with 1. That means 8 goals came from the people up the field. Now, that is a dramatic change from what we've been used to. It's the way that Brisbane won a couple of premierships. It's that group of midfielders who can kick goals as well. Even in this game, we had Jack Steele, who kicked 4 goals in total last year, getting 1 goal, so he's 25% of the way towards a season's worth already. But that's what we need to see. It's the people up the field, the pickets, people like Jack. The smaller running players are going to be the ones that win your games in the way that the future is and the way that the game's played. So, yes, we've got everyone's very excited about JBR, and you should be. As Binman said, twice in 20 years that we've had someone who's been able to kick 5 goals in a half a footy. And good luck to him and Majacek as well. But there's more that's going on in the forward line than perhaps what you might see at first glance.
Before you go, Binman, I think you missed one very big point about JVR, and that's what he didn't have to do this week, which he did.
Oh, yes. I actually had that in my notes. I completely forgot about it because I've been banging on about it for two years.
We all have. So he wasn't having to ruck. He might have to this year. I mean, he was rucking for the ball.
He rucks
the
inside 50, though.
Yeah, that's fine.
All of the rucks inside 50.
So did Tom Hawkins, and a lot of other forwards do that. But he wasn't running up and down the field for 8-10 minutes a quarter. So.
And then having to rest after that, so he's not a full forward. So
that'll benefit him.
And I thought Pets did an okay job.
Yeah, we'll talk about Pets in a bit later. There's a question about that, but yeah. Anyway, yeah,
just,
sorry,
just follow up from spot on what George was saying about both JVR and Majacek. I don't think you can underestimate the footy IQ of Majacek, the importance of that. Like, you know, it's not sexy. It's not, you know, but exactly as George said, to lead away, to drag, to create that space. How often, you know, you have players, Melbourne, who just aren't sort of, they're not like that, it, you know, often not thinking of that stuff, it would appear. He looks like a leader. I really love that. The point about those handballs that I noted before, the 221 metres gain from handball, I think is a critical factor in that space that George, I totally agree, we're kicking to the space and forcing players to lead. And there was a really terrific example of that. I forget who kicked it. It was Salem, that pass he kicked to Van Ruin. Van Ruin had, there was a beautiful mark, but he had to sprint hard to get to that ball. And Salo put it out in front of him and said, here you go, here's a footy, run out at it. But that metres game with handball really speaks to that overlap handball that we're obviously really focusing on, where, you know, long handballs, getting it forward. That overlap creates space inside 50 because you beat the zone back, you beat their defensive line back, and so you're naturally got space inside 50. And, you know, I don't know if you listened to Lyon's press conference. He's a nong, I tell you. You know, I really dislike the way he goes at the younger reporters. I really dislike it. But he was talking about offside. If you listen to that, he was, we let them get offside. They're always going to get offside. This is what they do. I mean, this is, we haven't ever played a game, AFL footy. But that's what he's talking about, is getting ahead of the ball. When he talks about getting offside, what he means is players running ahead of the ball, and that creates space and the overlap handball, and we get out the back. And my immediate thought when he said that was, well, why didn't your bloody coach to stop us doing that? But yeah, I think that you know, those combination of things definitely creates that space. And it was just awesome, wasn't it, to see players leading into space and hitting. It was like, what, you know, watching Dunstall back in the day, or yeah, so terrific.
Singer says, welcome back, fellas. Great to have you back on the airwaves. I'd love to get your impressions of the new recruits from today's game, because I thought each of them brought something to the table. The inclusion of Checkers looks like it's only going to help JVR's development and breakout. And the fact that Majacek chipped in with 3 goals of his own is nothing to sneeze at either. CJ made some really important spoils, and his disposal honestly wasn't as bad as I was expecting based on our reports. I still think he can add some genuine dash off the half back as well, although we didn't really get to see the full extent of that today. Given the loss of Track and Clary, and with Viney sidelined for the early part of the season, it feels like an absolute blessing that the Saints have gifted us the man of steel. I thought he played a really solid game. He didn't dominate, but like the rest of our mids, he played his role well in what was a pretty heavy rotation through the guts. And then there's Trelly. What an excitement machine. So many times on the pod last year, you guys said we needed a clone of Cozzy who could impact both through the middle and up forward. Jason Taylor might have just procured for us the next best thing. Dangerous and electric, he will light up the G. Would love to hear your thoughts on the new boys. So, Bin Man, first impressions of the new boys. We've talked a little bit about Majacek, CJ, Steele and Trelly. Early days, obviously, but did you see enough to suggest these recruits genuinely changed the look of the side?
Funnily enough, of changing the look of the side, the one that changed the look of the side the most, I think, was CJ. Like, CJ was, as I said last week on the show, King clearly showed his hand in terms of targeting a player like CJ with a brief to run and carry off the halfback flank, take risk, go for it. Look, to be honest, you know, his kicking wasn't too bad. He missed the target. He's going to turn the ball over a lot. Like, he's exposed form at his age. I think he's 27 or something. Yeah. He's not suddenly going to become a player that doesn't turn the ball over, but, you know, that's what they knew that in training him in. So, sorry, Andy, you're going to say?
No, I just don't. What I don't like is when we kick into him, the short kick into him, and then he just gives a big kick up the line. It's not sort of the way we're wanting to play. And I don't.
Well, no, it is, because if you listen, it's really interesting. There's a bit overemphasis on, well, we're not long down the line kicks anymore like we were under Goody.
There are times
that
you have
interviews. These pre-game Fox interview before that, this game and that game, they will kick long. We're a territory team, unlike the Saints, who like to kick it around their back half and use up cheap stats. We are a get. He talks about it. King talks. We are a get it forward team. If you can't find a short short hit, you go long. And I suspect CJ has been told you go long whenever, unless there's a 100% clear player that you're not going to miss, go long. The same way I'd do the same with Rivers, to be honest. So we will take territory. He talks about us being a territory team, get it forward quickly, which is what we're talking about before. I thought he was tremendous. We talked about Majacek. As I mentioned, Steele had his, you know, like a, just a fantastic game, you know. So 19 player ratings, 20 player ratings. 19.7 is player ratings. He got a coach's vote. Can't argue with that. Van Ruin got 9, by the way, and Maxi Hall got 8, and I think Max Gorn got 7. So a fantastic performance by Steele. He's the sort of player that's hard to tells out there, isn't
it? Yeah, well, we said that. We did, George and I have talked about that. A lot of training reports mentioned not noticing Steele, because you don't notice him. He just does the hard work. And I guarantee you, those stats will be uniform across the season that he gets. He's a workhorse. He just racks them up like that, and he'll have a lot of games like that where he's not necessarily the 30 plus possessions and Norm Smith medalist, but he does his job and does it well.
Yeah, does his job. And to be honest, it's amazing. It reminds me of Junior Mac when, you know, how did St Kilda, what were they thinking letting him go? And if you can listen to his post-match interview on ABC, he was asked about how he felt and he was gutted. Yeah.
You could tell him
completely by, you know, he was the captain of the side, all Australian. Is he
I think he's had once in 2021. I posted 2 in the post-game thread. There was one on ABC Sport Radio or whatever, and then there was one on the broadcast.
I thought he was enormous. And similarly to sort of what George was saying about Majacek's footy smart, dragging that player out, he's got obvious footy IQ. You can't, you know, you just need that stuff. I thought he was awesome. Important part of our core midfield players, the way I'm thinking of it, rather than starting midfield, there's core midfields. Him, he's one of them, obviously. And, you know, obviously very good for culture. That, you know, really, you know, he's a solid citizen. Terrific performance. I thought Trelly actually was interesting. He sort of was in and out of the game. Yeah. But, like, you know, that's one of the most exciting goals I've seen for years.
It brought the
How good was it?
Considering there were only however many there were, 50, that it brought the house down.
And I'll tell you an example of what I mean about, so not getting carried away with this idea that King likes territory. So if you look at the way Brisbane are playing at the moment, the Pies are playing a bit like the Saints are playing, and Hawthorn, lots of short and medium kicks. We're going long. Colt had Majacek on for a short 20-metre pass. He bypassed Majacek, went over the top and kicked that to Trell, and it was just super exciting. That combination of those two players, to him and his cousin, Coz, is just going to be something for years and years. We're going to watch that. Looks ready to go for me for AFL. Fit, strong, smart. He's just going to be a joy to watch. Obviously, he's going to get up and down the ground. You know, he's going to be a runner. Everyone's got to be a runner in this team, basically.
Yeah, you saw, look how high up Chandler was a lot of the times. He was really playing that high half forward role that you love so much.
Game is becoming shifting and so radically in the last. It's become a running game. You're not, and you know, that's why T-Mac wasn't in the side. If you can't run, you can't play AFL footy.
Mm. All right. George, anything you want to add on any of those players?
No, not really. Yeah. We certainly needed CJ, you know, to replace McVee, we needed Steele to have someone in the middle with a bit of grunt. and we needed Majacek because of what we're talking about, the lack of talent coming through. So he's going to be great. But Trelly's a real icing on the cake for us.
Yeah.
So, it's nice to have.
Last thing on Majacek, just the last thing that I saw him do, it wasn't really game-saving because we're 13 points up, but taking that mark in defence, knowing to get back in defence, and that's probably a thing, you know, that those simulations where they do the last few minutes and he went back into defence, took game-saving, but that type of game-saving mark, if for want of a better word.
The other thing I noticed about Majacek in the game was when it was in our forward line, for example, Windhager was putting a heavy tag onto Cozzy around the pack, And Majacek was doing everything he could to make sure that Windacre was pushed out of the way. Yeah. So that's the sort of thing that we haven't seen from one of our regular forwards in a long, long, long time.
Yeah. And, you know, George, sorry to that, but footy IQ, but the other aspect of that is leadership. And I really think we've lacked leadership up in our forward half as much as anything. It, like someone, and he strikes me as a natural leader.
All right, Dominion says, welcome back, guys. A new era at Demonland is underway, and it started with a very sweet win. It feels especially fitting that it came against the side that all but brought the previous era to a close. Do you have any stats on the centre bounce attendances? It felt like there was a really heavy midfield rotation throughout the game, and that mix seemed to extend beyond the usual on-ball group to include the wings and even some half-forwards. Cozzy, Steele, Windsor, Cully, Langford, Sparrow and Rivers all looked to spend time in there, and there may have been a few others as well. None of them ended up with huge possession numbers. Windsor and Steele were the only Demons to get past 20 disposals with 21 each, while Cozzy finished with 19. By contrast, the Saints had six players in the high 20s and two over 30, although not all of those were midfielders. I'm not suggesting our mids had poor games. I thought we probably lacked a bit of contested bull and grunt at times, but that was always likely given the changes over summer. More than anything, I found the rotations really interesting, and I'm curious whether the centre bounce numbers back up that impression from watching live, particularly before I've had a chance to see the replay. How did you guys assess the midfield overall? What did you make of the rotations? And based on the limited sample size from the opening couple of weeks of the AFL, how do you think that the group stacks up against the rest of the competition? In response to that, Dice provides the centre bounce attendance percents and writes, great question. I don't think I've ever seen us use so many different centre bounce attendance, CBA, I'll refer to it from now on, combinations from 11 different players in a game. Would love to hear any further thoughts on our CBAs, whether it might have been pre-planned or was it just circumstance, as the Saints also used 12 different players in the guts. So Max had 32 CBAs, 89%, Cozzy 24 and 67%, Jack Steele 22, 61%, Caleb Windsor 20, 56, Trent Rivers 16, 44%, Colton 9, 25%, Tom Sparrow 7, 19%, Harvey Langford 7, 19% centre bounce attendances, Harry Petty 4 with 11%, Xavier Lindsay 2, 6%, Christian Salem 1, 3%. And Grima says, thoughts on our midfield up against a few big seasoned veterans. Has the game shifted completely away from having at least one bull? Is Steele all we need? And if so, what does that mean for Viney? We will have to adapt and find. Viney, have to adapt to find a new position? So, George, and I'm sure, Biman, you're going to have something to say on this too. How did you assess the performance of our midfield overall? What do you make of the rotations in terms of the makeup and the frequency, and based on the limited sample size that you've seen from other teams in the opening couple of weeks, how do you think our group stacks up against the rest of the competition?
This is a really, really difficult one to answer. I can certainly say thank goodness for Max Korn in the middle. Thank goodness for the change in the ruck rules, and we'll talk about that a bit later on when we talk about Max. He's adapted his rucking technique that is now necessary with the change in the ruck rules. But thank goodness for Max around the ground, more importantly. That's where his true value is. And again, we'll talk about that later. Thank goodness we got Jack Steele as well. It's all very well having outside runners all the time, but half the time you're going to be needing someone with grunt who can get the ball to the outside runners. While Max is there, we're getting the ball outside the sort of range of where the ball fell in the middle at centre bounces from what it was last season. But that's the case for every game. The big, tall ruckmen who are able to actually hit the ball to the outside, perhaps that 5 metre perimeter, are the ones that are going to make their team successful in the mids. The other thing is, because the ball's going out, the ball's moving quickly, far, far, far more quickly than it did in previous years. So we're going to see a lot more effectively scores from midfield hitouts. The questions will be, the other thing was, thank goodness St Kilda have got a useless brains trust. They put Naziah Wanganeen Middler down the forward line playing Pagan's Paddock for what seemed like a quarter at one stage. But more importantly, and I think one of the Age writers today pointed it out, he wasn't playing around the ball. That's where he does. That's where he does his real damage, and they took him out of that. So, thanks, St Kilda. Thanks for doing something really stupid, but they did it again. So,
apparently, he took himself out of it. Like he had license to go wherever he wants. That's what Lyon said. He was asked about it in the presser, and he said it again. And he's allowed to do what he wants and make his decision. And he chose to bring Colt forward. I totally agree with you. I mean, it was three goals in a game where there was what 27 odd goal scores. Yeah. You know, it was crazy.
That was a stupid thing in the way it was played as well. You know that. You know, thank goodness the ball, St Kilda didn't have enough players to be able to get the ball out of the situation while he was sitting in the goal square, because it would have resulted in a goal.
But totally agree.
The reason it would have come out is if you had him up there getting the ball in the first place. Yeah. But yeah, completely brainless. We're going to see a lot of rotations. Every team is doing this now. We're going to see not just, you know, 3 to 6 players playing sort of permanent midfields. You're going to see 12 players playing a midfield role of some sort. That's where the run's coming from. That's the way it's being done. So expect to see that. We're building up a group of people to be able to do that on a regular basis. You're going to have to, and the teams that are going to struggle are the ones that are reliant on, you know, 2, 3, 4 players in the middle. So I think, for example, Collingwood on the weekend really struggled. You know, they rely on their old Pendlebury's and side bottoms to go in when necessary, but they're really struggling with that. Windsor was in the middle, but I wish they'd used him a little bit better. He was completely and utterly shot by halfway through the second quarter. I don't think he did a CBA after that. Maybe that's just fitness, because there are a few other players in this game that were really struggling, perhaps with the heat as well. But you do need 12, sort of 9 to 12 players to be able to run for the whole game. How we stack up, I don't think we got a good handle on where we sit with this compared to other sides. North Melbourne and Richmond weren't great practice games in terms of where we're at with the midfield. I think the real benchmark for me will be when we play Gold Coast, when they've got Witts, who's a really tall ruck who can clear the centre zone, and they've got Raoul Anderson and some other bloke called Petrarca playing on the outside. So I think they'll be the benchmark for the season. But it's dramatically changed from where we were last year, when we were dependent on Viney, Petrarca and Oliver. And I think Viney may well have, if he's ever able to come back this year, I think he's going to have real, real struggle to be able to have any input into the midfield. But we can only wait and see for that later on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. You mentioned this last week as well, George, sort of almost a dozen of utility type players. That's the, you know, the Brisbane model, who can plug and play half forward, can play wing. It's really interesting, really fascinating the way they're using Cully and Langford. They're both starting as wingers, both playing as tall wingers, as I suggested. And then you've got Langdon, who's like just an everywhere utility. But I was really thinking after the game how fluid the rotations were. And I think that, as George suggests, that's becoming a sort of competition-wide sort of style of midfield, where traditionally under Goody and traditionally in footy, you had, you know, the standard midfield model was you had your starting midfield, like your gun midfielders, and then, you know, your players come in and out and chop out those midfielders. It's shifted to a much more fluid, where instead of sort of your starting midfield, you've got core mids is how I'm thinking of your core midfielders, and they're the ones that you mentioned at the top: Cozzie, Jack Steele, Caleb Windsor, Trent Rivers. They're our core mids, and I agree that I'll be interested to see whether Viney can force his way into becoming one of those core mids. I mean, Caleb Windsor still had 20, George noted probably less in the second half, but he still had 20 centre bounce attendances. Jack Steele had 22, as by way of contrast. And then past that core group, you had players coming in and out, Trent Rivers, Toll Strip came in. I'm not sure whether that was to come into he took Nats when he came in, but he was in there. Langford came off the wing seven times and was in the midfield mix. Harrison Petty obviously rucked. And the other one was interesting too. And this is what we'll see, and it's really what touching on George says. Xavier Lindsay came in twice in that last quarter at critical times, and Christian Salem, he also came in for a centre bounce attendant. So I think what we'll see is we'll have that core group who are our, you know, not so much our starting, not necessarily all together at one time, but they take the highest percentage of the centre bounce attendances, and they're supported by, you know, the fleet of six or seven other players. And I can see someone like Cully actually coming in. He played a bit of midfield last year, but I think the core mids are Gorney, Kasiah, Pickett, Jack Steele, Caleb Windsor and Trent Rivers. How it stacks up with other midfielders, I think we're seeing a shift in the importance of midfielders. You're still going to need your ball winners. Like, you watch the Dogs playing, they're amazing at the moment. They're scoring from stoppages, and but you know, like, they only have the one real bull at the I suppose Ed Richards, but in Libba. I agree. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where Viney is, but the big thing is leg speed too. Is Caleb Windsor and Cozzy are both quick, and all midfields now need a player who can run and carry out the front of the contest. And you saw it with really good effect a few times with both Windsor and Cozzy really running fast outside the midfield, which was just so exciting to watch. So.
Right. Lazy writes, seeing our guys hit the field in round one with clarity and conviction in our game plan and the way we want to move the ball has to be a massive tick for Stephen King and the way he has instilled this over the summer. It must be said, whether people want to hear it or not, that Simon Goodwin and the football department were working tirelessly to evolve our game plan last year. And although it wasn't always pretty, it was happening. My question to you guys, and specifically Binman, is what are the key differences between what Goody was trying to achieve last year and what King is this year? One of my observations is that our guys are much less system-based and playing a lot more on instinct, with the first option being the best one. Man, was it was exciting being at the footy again. Go day. So, Binman, what do you reckon of what Lazy has said?
Yeah, I spoke about that last week in terms of the differences between the game plan last year and this year. And, you know, just to really sort of sum all of that up is that I think we were trying to move the ball quicker last year. There's no question about that. And, you know, when the data comes out, I bet you our meters gained by kicks are probably even more this year than they were last year, because we weren't going to get territory. What wasn't very effective last year was our defensive system. Our defensive system was all over the shop last year, and I reckon, to be honest, didn't get nearly the level of criticism from the media or even on Demon Land and D's fans that it deserved. That's a big change. And the obvious thing is the speed at which we're moving, like the getting it inside 50 in that space that George noted. That's a big key in the defensive system. What I really like is the, like, I don't know about you guys, but it looks really obvious already what King is trying to do. It's really clear, you know, that people sort of, part of the thing with Goody was it was not always clear what he was trying to achieve. King, we talked about the strengths of King last week. He's a really good communicator. He's made it very clear what he wants in the interviews I've heard from a game plan. I've now listened to quite a few interviews in the lead up to that game and afterwards in the presser. He talks about that. He wants to see an exciting, he wants to see high scores, which means we're going to have to be prepared to give up, you know, scores and not get so upset when we turn the ball over. And, I think defensively the big difference is we're pushing up much higher, much more aggressively. We're still keeping one out the back. We're looking to squeeze our forwards up as well, really compress that field and creating exactly what Lyon was getting to about offside, meaning players out the back. Hopefully we'll see a little bit of that. But the thing that really jumped out from what Lazy says is true, and I mentioned this last week with when we met Colt when at the player function thing. He said, that's exactly what he said, King has said, you guys are all high draft picks. You're all AFL. You haven't made it this far. play, you know, back yourself in, use your skill, whereas Goody was much more system-focused, and I thought it was interesting, much more focused, according to Colt, on players being in a specific spot on the ground and not leaving that spot, like playing, adhering to that structure, and there's much less of that. And I thought it was fascinating the way they used Colt in this. I know we're going to question about it later, but just the way it freed him up, the way he was talking, he was more excited when he was speaking to us. And it was fascinating. In that presser, it was mentioned, I listened to ABC radio interviews with players, almost everyone, including the coach, said, you know, playing on instinct, being more fun, enjoying yourself, and really backing players in. That seems to be a real theme. King repeated it almost word for word, what Colt had said, which told me that it's a repeated message. Like when you hear Colt saying, you know, 2 weeks later or a month later, the senior coach saying almost word for word what Colt said, that tells me that there's a clear message. You know, when players start repeating, I remember back in 21, they were repeating that mantra that we're the hardest training side, no one can outrun us, all of that stuff. You can tell when messages are repeated often and it becomes a core message. And I think it is a core message that Lazy correctly picks up on, is play with excitement, back yourself in, like Trelly's goal. Like, he could have passed that twice, couldn't he? Yeah. But back yourself in, go for it, kick the goal. And it makes for exciting footy, and that makes for players who aren't sort of, I think a player like Colt gets it too much in his head if he has to worry about, do I have to, you know, stay in this?
Yeah, am I out of the line?
Exactly. And I thought we'll talk about that role a bit later, but I just thought it was fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating to see how much Colt enjoyed the game and his influence.
To speak about Colt, Sam 6172 says, great to have you all back. Would love to hear your thoughts on Colt's game. From what I could see, he had the responsibility for Nass for most of the game. Not sure if it was a solid tag or more of a loose run with, but had a quick glance. And with the exception of Nass's scoring a few goals, they had pretty similar stats. For mine, I think he really stepped up a few times. Needs to work on his disposal under pressure, as a few were a little sloppy. Handballs to the man on the lead were not quite to advantage, and a few errant kicks, but the intent was there and showed a good bit of mongrel. Love to hear your thoughts on his game. Is Colt's best position at AFL level as a tagger? So, George, Colt got the job on the $2 million man who tore us apart last time that we played them. Do you see him developing into a genuine tagging option, or is that just part of his apprenticeship of being a genuine role player in multiple positions, which we've seen, you know, forward, but back, now tagging?
It'll be interesting to see how they use him. I don't think some teams have got players who they use as a heavy tag, like a Windhaker from St Kilda, but it's the exception rather than the rule these days. So I think if a coach or King in this particular case is going to use someone in that role, it's a role that they won't be doing every week, I suspect. You know, we've seen two examples in the last 2 weeks. One team chose to tag Nick Dacos and the next team chose to let him run around and do as he pleased. You've got to look at it tactically and strategically about whether you want to use someone effectively to sacrifice their own game. What are you going to get? It's the pluses and minuses from both sides. So, look, I don't know that Colt's the best tagger as such. He's got a long way to go. He's only played, 20 games? Is it something along those lines? He's got a long way to go in terms of his education in AFL football. I don't think he's still quite caught up with the speed and the expectations of what's required to be a standout. However, he did the job necessary on Wanganeen Miller, and we were certainly helped by, like I said, the stupidity of the St Kilda Brains Trust and how they used him. Well, to take him away from the contest, good. Might as well put him on the bench. We'll do that. I don't know that there's actually anyone else in the side who you could use in that role. They tried Langdon last year, I think, in something similar, but I don't think there's many other players who've got the leg speed and the endurance and the willingness to go with someone for the whole time. He'll probably find himself given that role in the future. good luck to him, but he has to work on his own game a little bit more. And while on statistics, apart from Wanganeen Miller's three goals, statistically he was pretty similar. But it's, like I said, it's nice when they take him your main player away from where the ball is. So,
I mean, Nass's game was still pretty high level. Like, he was their third highest rated player. But I mean, you're going to expect that. It wasn't a super hard tag. And as George said, their numbers weren't radically different. His player rating was about half of that, but that's, he kicked three goals. That really spikes the player rating. But he had eight score involvements, Colt. To Nass only had six, partly because he was deep. Three of Nass's six score involvements with the three goals he kicked. He had 17 disposals. Colt wasn't a super hard tag, but I thought the fascinating thing was two fascinating things. Is one, it showed an insight into the man management approach by King. And I heard him interviewed twice talking specifically about Colt, saying he's super aerobic, he's got all of the skills, and basically he's going to make it. 17 disposals. My big knock on Tolstrup has always been he doesn't get enough of the footy. Now, he's got seven. I reckon that would be close to his career high disposal number. While he's got a job on the AFL's best player, one of the AFL's best player, not the best player, but you know what I mean? So I think that was terrific performance from that perspective by Colt. Totally agree with George. I don't think they'll do it every time. And it wasn't a super hard tag, but what it did do is Nass brought him to the ball. And so perhaps that was a factor. The other, it's just the fascinating thing about Colt was just the sort of his energy and being selected to play. And I think that King, I heard him talk about it as well, is that it's sort of really that leaning into the enjoyment, leaning into which will suit a player like Colt. So I was impressed with his game. He did a great job. And just finally, just in terms of insight into King, he's been involved in footy a long time. He said, he was asked specifically, are you going to tag anyone with Nass? And he said, this is 5 days ago, without a word of a lie, he said, no, we'll back our own system in.
And Kane Corns wasn't happy with that. But anyway.
But he apparently, when asked post-match, so, you know, it's like, I guess lying is the first language.
Oh, he's learned from the best at Geelong.
Yeah, exactly. He's keeping it post-match, close. He said this plan had been in place for a month. Yeah. So a week ago, he says, no, we're not going to tag Nass.
Well, you know what? Why should he give any info? All right. You know, we bang on about transparency, but not with that, with game plan stuff. Don't give the opposition.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not going to play poker with King because I believed him when he said
that. Colts won. That was his second highest. He had 18 disposals in round 24 of his first year in 2024 against ninth terrific game. But anyway, so let's get to the next one. Mandalorian says, really happy to see the podcast pop up in my feed the other day and even happier to have you guys back on deck. I understand that footy has evolved again and that our new game plan and style is built around speed. With that comes the inevitable risk of turnovers, which can put the defence under a lot of pressure. Even so, conceding 15 goals and around 32 scoring shots to St Kilda is a concern. That sort of scoreline will win most games. While we were able to score heavily ourselves, I thought we looked shaky defensively, especially against a side not exactly known for high-powered forward play or big scores. We seemed particularly vulnerable once the ball hits the ground, which feels like an issue that has lingered for a few years now. I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on the backline and whether you see genuine concerns there, particularly against sides with strong key forwards and dangerous crummers. A trip to Freo might give us a better indication and could potentially expose those weaknesses. Watson 11 asks, really looking forward to this podcast and season. I love our attacking mindset, but it will open up our defence a lot and seems to need athletic defenders who can cover the ground. Does Lever fit into our new game style? So, B-Man, we're clearly playing more aggressive brand. We've talked about it all night, and that inevitably exposes the backline more. Do you see structural issues there, or is it just part of the risk-reward of the new style?
Not so much structural issues. I mentioned last week in the pod and looking at the differences in the game plan this year to last year, one of the key differences is how aggressively or how high the defensive line is pushing up when the ball was in our forward half. And the the upshot of that is when you turn the ball over, which we did often enough, and we're going to have to get used to turnover. I mean, we scored 70 odd points from turnover. We gave up 56. We were plus 14 in that. But like they turned, like a lot of their turnovers were under no pressure. Their kicking was really woeful. But that high press, that aggressive press we were playing, basically what Goody used to do is to have that player back, which was Lever often, staying high in defence, does two things. One means that if you're going to leave a player back, all the player, the other six defenders or five defenders who are pushed up have got to cover a seventh defender, so they've got to work hard. But the main thing is when the ball gets over the top of that offside, as Lyon would say, they've got to have legs to get back, the leg speed to get back. The game style is so aerobically challenging generally, but this particular game style that King wants us to play is, you've got to be, and you watch the players are all talking about it now, you've basically got to be an elite runner. And the sort of, in my mind, it's like that 400 meter runner who can also get hit. So I think that is going to expose our defense. That's why T-Mac wasn't selected, is because you just need leg speed. Structurally, I think we look all right. Frustratingly, I thought, I don't know about you guys, but we just weren't clunking our marks. We just dropped so many marks in our defensive where it looked like they had a good purchase on it and dropped it. Disco was solid. I thought Petty was solid. We'll talk about him in a sec. So not a structural issue. I think defensively it looks better than last year in terms of structure and the system. The whole game plan looks like you can tell what we're trying to do, which I think is half the battle. If we can tell it from the stands, then the players are likely to be able to tell. It worries me. Two things, Bigfoot nails. It is our biggest weakness defensively is since Jeddah Nev left, we just haven't had that small defender, the Quaynor type, who can take that small medium and work really hard. So I'm really hopeful AMW is that player. Obviously, we're missing Bowie. He will come back in and play that. He's probably that. The big query for me is Lever. He was poor in the first half. I thought he does look slow. He gets exposed one-on-one. He ended up on Ryan a few times. That's what the structural thing is. You're going to mix and match that fluid sort of movement of players, is you're going to end up on a small player. His leg speed was exposed a little bit. To be fair to Levy, had a really, really sort of, I thought, a much, much better second half, and was really important in that last quarter, his leadership. It does worry me a little bit. The player that I mentioned last week that I'm really looking forward to this season, I thought he had a great game, was Howes. He's exactly, for me, the prototype defender sort of in terms of athletic profile that modern footy demands. He's, the old Collingwood six-footer. He's probably a bit taller than that, isn't he? And he's got good legs. He can get up and down the ground like you need to be able to do. But crucially, he can play on a Ryan, and also, if need be, he can pick up one of their sort of medium-sized forwards, and even at a pinch, I guess, cross over and be a third man in for, a Lynch or something. Structurally, I think we look good. I think we're going to turn the ball over a lot. We're going to have to be put up with some high scores kicked against us. And to be perfectly honest, St Kilda, I thought they wasted 10 minutes, in partly because of what George said. Nash should have been up around the ball. I was so pleased to see him deep. They just didn't take advantage of that 10 minutes of dominance they had in the last quarter. They could have won that game. And if I was a Saints fan, I'd be pretty bloody frustrated. So, I think we're going to have to put up with giving up big scores. I think King's decided to risk that and say, we want high scoring. That's what McRae did in 23. The opposite is what Mitchell did at the Hawks. He came in and worked on the defense first. We don't need to work on the defense. We need to work on our offense. So, we're going to give up plenty of high scores, but we'll have some fun because we'll score a fair bit ourselves, I think.
Bigfoot says, hallelujah, the Demon Podcast has returned. Petty lining up as the backup ruck was definitely not on my 2026 bingo card. And how good was it not having to drag JVR out of the forward line a couple of times a quarter to pinch hit in the ruck, bust a gut and run up and down the ground for half an hour again? Funny what happens when you let the kid stay forward. He kicked six. Anyway, what did you make of the unorthodox move to use Petty in the ruck? I thought he handled himself pretty well and even managed to rove and chase up his own ball on a couple of occasions. And can Petty continue to perform as a key defender / ruckman? George, Petty in the ruck, a bit of left field, but it seemed to work. Is that something we keep doing, or was it just a one-week tactical play? Marshall was an answer.
I think it'll be 1 week for another reason. We'll talk about that shortly. Petty acquitted himself very well in the ruck. There's no doubt about that. You know, he really did quite well in the ruck. The problem for us, and St Kilda were not able to exploit it, was the same as the problem that we had with JVR. You take Petty out of the back line. He's then got to go into the ruck and then takes 10 minutes off, and our back line's exposed all of a sudden. And St Kilda weren't able to take advantage of that, and we'll finish up against better teams really being exploited for exactly that.
Well, Fremantle next week, if that's the case.
Yeah, so Fremantle, exactly. Yeah. They've got Amos, Tracy and Voss in the forward line. You can't leave the back line to basically Lever and a couple of, you know, believe me, you know, Howes and CJ and Disco all did a great job, but they're going to struggle without that, you know, bigger body being around during that period of time. So I think next week you will see a T-Mac come in, not because he's fast, because he actually can do ruck if needed. Mm. There's no future in T-Mac looking beyond this year sort of thing, but you've got to start to think about how you're using individual players a bit better, and I don't want to see us exposed. Like I said, we were lucky. St Kilda's brain trust isn't all that smart, they didn't take advantage of it. I was just on the back line, I don't know that Lever's a great thinker in the sense. When you know, Tolstrup was in their forward line with Wanganeen, Miller. Everybody had moved up the ground and left quite literally 150 metres between them and the rest of the play. I would have thought that Lever would have dropped just that half a kick behind, because if the ball did come out, it was going to go all the way. We were missing someone to marshal them that May was always able to do. Whatever you think about May, he was always able to marshal those around them to do the right thing at the right time. I'm not seeing the same sort of thing with Lever. He's very good at telling people what to do, but I don't know that he's actually marshalling to do what they need. So I think T-Mac would bring that, because T-Mac spent, you know, a good proportion of the time as a backman as well. So, I think for next week, and hopefully, I don't know, Kentfield's the other option. I think Kentfield became the second option in the ruck.
He's not back yet for a few weeks. So
But I think we'll see him used as that, rather than using a prime, you know, a full forward or a
defender
or a full back as your backup ruck during that 10-minute period.
Yeah. I think you touched on the for me, Lever and T-Mac, I think, and Paddy, those three are competing for the same spot, because I think Disco's a lock. And I think, based on Paddy, I thought he played really well. And again, we'll talk about that, you know, but he played well. So I think T-Mac and Lever essentially competing for that spot. And T-Mac was pretty unlucky not to get selected. He could have gone either way. I mean, Lever's an All-Australian. So, look, he had a much better second half, but the other thing that worries me, he's just terrible one-on-one. And that free kick he gave away, again, probably wasn't there, but Ryan just one-on-one, get in a wrestle with, you know what I mean, like, how did he give a free kick to Ryan? It was a pretty soft free kick. But he's just not great one-on-one. So, you know, he played better in the second half, though.
Demon WA says, shout out to the milestone man. Salem had a solid game and he's a true legend of the club. Can't say enough good things about the way he goes about it. Hope he plays another 50 to 100. Great win, boys. Big man, Salo, seems to have a new lease on life, having had a full preseason under his belt. Certainly helped him. Still doing things quietly and effective after all these years.
Yeah, and that kick he hit up, you know, that's what we want to see. And it was interesting, as I said, he took a centre bounce. I thought he was excellent, actually. Yeah. And, you know, he's sort of gone under the radar a bit, but of our senior players, I thought from a senior player perspective, he really stood up. You know, he'll probably play better games in, you know, in his career. He's, what was his player ratings? Was just looking here, is 6.3. So that's, you know, it's not a crazy good game, but he was solid, showed great leadership. That kick was a beauty, and it's exactly what George was, you know, it was emblematic of the perfect example of what George was saying of kicking to space. And just on that, I just love the fact how hard Van Ruin, I didn't think he was going to get there. And he got there and one grabbed it. And then more importantly, went back and flushed it. You know, he's kicking. Just kicking looks just brilliant. But, yeah, terrific from Salo. And as you said, I think the key is that he's had a uninterrupted preseason. Yeah. That's really the critical thing. He's just really had a lot of bad luck through his career, hasn't he?
Yeah, certainly has. Lefty says, welcome back, Demonland Potty. And can we take a moment to give a massive shout out to our captain, Fantastic Max Scorn? He was absolutely enormous yesterday. These new ruck rules were supposedly designed to suit someone like Tom DeConing. Max gave the multi-million-dollar man TDK a proper lesson in ruck craft and endurance. In fact, after that performance, there's a fair case that TDK should be handing over a slice of that monster contract as tribute to the undisputed king of the ruckman. Better luck next time, sweet prince. George, once again, our eight-time All-Australian ruckman Max Scorn can take a bow for clipping the wings of yet another upstart.
I would encourage everyone, there's a link to it on Demonland, to go and have a look at Jeff White's analysis of the ruck situation. It is absolutely superb.
Of this game.
Yeah, I posted it this afternoon.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And two things that he highlighted was firstly, Max's change to the way that he has adapted to the centre bounce situation and how he attacked DeConing at the centre bounce. And the second thing that was really telling was around the ground, his footy smarts about where to run and when to run, more importantly, and how he absolutely left DeConing quite literally 20 metres behind him at times because he was able to read the play and know where to go and do the right thing at the time. So how much are they spending on DeConing?
1.7
million. Yeah. They're not getting value for money at the moment. And we saw that no more so than in the last quarter where DeConing got the grand total of two possessions. When the game's on the line, that's the time that you need your big man to be able to show something. So, we spoke about
25%. Sorry, 25% of their salary cap is between Naz, DeConing and
Silvani.
He played all right, Silvani, but as I was saying to my mate at the footy, like going back in footy history, how many flags have been won by buying up a whole bunch of players? My mate was saying the Roos team in the 70s when that changed to the 10-year rule when they had that influx of players, but that's a, you know, that's 50 years ago or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and you look at when Collingwood did it when they're around the Buckley and Carlton did it. It just doesn't work. You've got to build a team, not individuals. So,
which is interesting. Is exactly the approach King's taken. The opposite approach: build the team culture first, and then worry about the. You know, he's got rid of our stars.
Yeah. So great game by Max as usual. Because we've got no further people that we're analysing, I'd just like to give a shout out to Harry Sharp for the last in the last quarter in particular. I reckon he won that game off his own efforts.
And I'm quite happy for them to sort of use him in that sort of sense where if he's fresh, you know, not keep him on the bench the whole game and just bring him on for 2 minutes. But
he had no right whatsoever to out-muscle Kilo, who's about 25 kilos, 25 kilos heavier. And then the one that Fritch obviously finished off with the goal was all because Harry Sharp got to the ball again.
Yeah. Totally.
Those two goals are what won us the game.
Was that Mark Paid? and then he played on, or I couldn't tell whether
he did take. I reckon he took the mark, and it was less a mark than any of the other marks. Right,
because after Fritter, I went bananas when Fritter didn't go back, eat up the clock, and instead played on and missed it.
That was so stupid.
Bad vibes from last year flowed through me like adrenaline.
Was that a mark?
Yeah.
Or did he play on because he was called to play on?
And then missed it, like suck the time out of the clock, go back.
He had to suck 30 seconds. If anything, you're going to scream at him, not for missing it, but for not going back and sucking 30 seconds.
I mean, once you decide
seconds.
To play on in that circumstance, you've got to get it. But I totally agree with Harry Sharp. But as I said, talked that last week, I predicted they'd pick Harry Sharp and they'd use five on the bench. They wouldn't be picking Heath, and they won't. This week either.
We'll talk about
is that you use your five bench, not as a sub, not bring him on. You spread all you're running through the thing. Just on Maxi, two things. One, 91% game time against De Koning, 91% game time, and I think I'm right in saying like he came off in the second half for a maximum of 3 minutes and not once in the last quarter.
Yeah, and no, it was even – before that, is into the third quarter sometime, I don't know. I saw it the other day, until the end, didn't come off.
I can't recall which show it was. I watched first crack and I watched on AFL.com, they have that round, like it's a thing with Damien Barrett. They showed, it's well worth watching, the interview with Sarah Jones did with Maxi on the ground directly afterwards.
Yeah,
I'm sure
he mentioned it there, yeah. Yeah, I did see it today.
Watch it, because if you haven't seen it, watch it. It's a really great insight into Maxi's psychology. He was like, he didn't know, you know, he talked about whether he still got it driving to the ground to his wife. Has he still one of the best? And then he had a clear point to prove. And he's a super competitive dude, as you know, Andy, obviously. He basically gets himself up, and he was, without saying it, the subtext of what he was saying was, this guy's is not the best ruck in the league. I'm the best ruck in the league. He's not worth anywhere close. And he was phenomenal. And exactly as George said, it was almost as if he was more than just, I'm going to go out, I'm going to drag this fella into the ground. I'm going to crush him. And the goal he kicked where he dragged, De Koning could not go with him. And the way he kicked the goal in the pocket, like that was just sheer running power. And they show that on first crack footage of his running. King gives a really in-depth dive on his game. It's great, great footage.
Well, Max said that, while he had his fingers, while he couldn't broken. Train, he just ran and ran and ran and ran. And we can see how good he is.
And the other thing that's changed with Max, we saw it in the Richmond practice game and in this game as well, is what odds last year would you have given Max from 20 metres out on a 45-degree angle?
I still can't believe he kicked it.
Straight. He's not doing this going around in the arc, spinning the ball around, all the things that we talked about. In the previous years, he's kicking straight, just straight over the ball, and it's going straight through.
And so, how critical was that goal? Was so critical at that point in time.
It's a true captain's goal.
And it was after, if you watch First Crack, they show the footage of that. He runs up and he runs Koenig on that. Koenig was 30, 40 metres behind him trying to why he was able to mark that ball by himself without De Koenig. Yeah. It was a masterclass. And I have to say, Robbie Flower is my ultimate footballer, but Max is, in all honesty, he's got a case to be the greatest ever Melbourne football player. Like his record, he'll be All Australian this year unless he gets injured.
I think he's got a case to say he's the best ruckman of all time.
It's hard for me to be objective. He's the best ruckman I've ever seen. Who else can do what he can do? He's 34. He looks as fit as he ever did. He looks strong as well.
If he continues on his trajectory this year, he'll get another All Australian. I mean, it's early days, it's round one, but
All Australians that I have hot dinners.
He won't die wondering, he'll give it his all every game. And, he'd have the attitude like Tom De Koning, you'll want to be the heir apparent, or the AFL or the media has made you the heir apparent. You got to take the crown from me. And you're not going to be given it. You're going to have to earn it. And
he's got a fair way to go.
He's still chasing that crown somewhere on the MCG right now.
Yeah, exactly. So
he can take his one. Maybe the pockets were too full and he couldn't run. Yeah.
And just quickly at that player sponsor function that we went to on the back, is the Maxi was saying that he really disliked the rules. Yeah. And he was saying that of any player in the AFL, it's most likely to disadvantage him because it's going to advantage leapers. And as George said, he's found a way to make it work.
He's not going to – Max isn't just going to tuck his tail between his legs and put his head down and say, all right, well, it's not going my way. He'll go, all right, well, how do I – and there you go, he did it. Let's get into the preview. The Demons head across the Nullarbor for the first time, for the first of many interstate trips this season to take on the Dockers on Saturday night. Before I get both of your takes on the match ahead, Master Chief says, obligatory welcome back, boys. You have been missed. Looking ahead to next week, I reckon we may need to find Gorney a bit of support in the ruck to deal with the combination of Jackson's athleticism and Darcy's sheer size and strength. Does the Moose come into calculations for debut? And on somewhat related note, is our backline strong enough to handle Fremantle's tall timber in Tracy, Amos and Voss? Does T-Mac come back into the frame with either he or Petty spending some time as the backup ruck to give Max a chop out without leaving us undersized down back? When one of them has to go into the ruck. So, big man, followed by George, your thoughts on the match, as well as giving consideration to Master Chief's question about bringing in the Moose or potentially T-Mac to act as the backup ruck.
I think it was Mandalorian who made this point. Apologies if it wasn't. That's I think they were spot on with this will be a real test for us this week. They play very similar, really, really similar game style to watch. Personally, I really dislike Frio. I really dislike him, like, with a passion. I don't know why. One of the reasons is long me, you know, of making the point about, well, just suck it up. You lost.
Yes.
You should have won that game. But, like, blaming the opening round thing, you know, did, you know, we didn't bother us, did it? So,
well, one of the guys on the radio today, maybe Kane Corns or King or someone, said, it's all, you know, it was the wrong timing for you to say that, to you know, say it straight after the game without seeing what happened in the other games, because other teams proved them wrong.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, King agreed. He was asked about those comments and he agreed with them, you know. Yeah. But, like, it's
ridiculous. Everyone should start on the same.
Anyway, yeah. But, look, they have got a very similar game style to us. They love their handballs as well, their forward handballs. They were very impressive in that first half. I watched that game. They were very impressive against the Cats. They fell away a little bit. Their game style is similarly aerobically challenging to us. Speaking of midfields, comparison of midfields, Jackson is in rare form. Darcy seems to have plateaued a little bit. I don't know whether, there's a fitness thing there. Sarong is a total gun. Brayshaw's a gun. They're sort of style, you know, in terms of method, it's a very similar method to what King is trying to implement. They were kicking around the back half a little bit in the first half of last year. They've gone more of that forward handball that they're looking to do, that Melbourne are looking to do. It will be a genuine test. I don't know what the odds are, but it's probably, you know, they're probably $1.40, $1.50 favourite, and we'd be $2.80 or something, and that's about right, I think. I think it's a really good game for us, having won this game. We won't be too cut up if we lose, obviously, because it will give us a good measure of where we're at against a team who have been playing this style now for a couple of years, who have got a lot of good gut players who will run the ball, and really look to exploit the run. So it'll be fascinating to see. What I'm interested in seeing is how our defense actually, not so much, how our defense sets up against theirs. Tracy was really getting up the ground, taking marks. But I don't think their forward line is, you know, Tracy and Amos are both good players, and Tracy in particular. And Voss, though, I don't rate particularly highly. He's big, but I think we've got the player that, you know, in some ways that will suit Lever, having a taller player to maybe link in. In terms of changes, I don't think there'll be any changes. I think Lever did enough. We flogged in a practice game, so we played really well, 100-point win. I don't think there will be any changes. It'll be running will be a massive premium in this game. They are a running team. We're a running team. You can look for players doing 14, 15, 16 kilometres. you know, it'll give, I think I'm really looking forward to it, partly because we won this week, but it will give us a really, you know, good sense of where we're at against I don't think they're top four, but, you know, like they're in the conversation for top six, aren't they? So it'll give us a good benchmark as to where we're at in terms of compared to them. So, yeah, really looking forward to it. I really hope we win, obviously. I'm not as confident as I was in the Saints game. I was actually pretty confident win that because I think the Saints are totally overrated. It's based on what they've brought in all of these players and paid a lot of money for them. But, yeah, so exciting game. You know, key, I think their midfield probably is pretty strong in terms of, you know, that will be a really interesting test for us to see how we set up against them. But, you know, we've got our weapons as well. And, you know, interestingly in age, their average age is 25. I think ours is something like 26, 27. So it's not as if we're a young team coming up against a, you know, a more seasoned team. We've obviously got younger players coming in. I'll be really interested to see how McVee goes as well. That'll be an interesting one. He's playing halfback flank, not wherever he wanted to play for the D. So exciting game. I'm just looking at the weather. What's the weather on Sunday, Andy?
Well, I haven't even looked.
It was 35 in Perth tomorrow.
Wow.
So I'd imagine.
Sunday, 30 degrees, no rain. So when is the game? It is Sunday, isn't it?
It is. No, Saturday night.
Saturday night. No, 33, no rain. So,
but night time, that's during the day. We play at 7:30 at night.
Yeah, yeah. So light winds during the day.
Or is that game, seven? Is that 7:30 our time at night, which would be
our time
earlier?
Our time. So it'll be 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So it'll still be warm.
It'll be warm. And then we've got the great day of footy next week because I'll be going along to watch Casey's first game at Winton Oval and then getting home, having dinner and watching the D's beat Freo.
Very nice.
It was interesting for Freo. I didn't get to see them play Geelong. I was listening to it, and what was astounding was they had Geelong on toast, absolutely on toast in the first half, and then threw it away. And you sort of go, hang on, this is meant to be a team that's got all these young runners and things like that. And
they ran out of puff. It's very demanding style of footy.
Yeah, and that was really surprising to me because but I just had a quick look at a few of the stats. Sarong topped their list with 30. Jackson was the next with 27. But apart from Erasmus, who played on the wing, not a single midfielder and no one else had more than 20. And I was just astounded at that for a team with that sort of midfield. You know, Young, who's probably the number three midfielder, had 16 and Brayshaw 14 touches.
I think, George, it speaks to what you were saying before about this. This is, I think, the like having a squad of midfielders as opposed to with some core ones, as opposed to like a starting midfielder who take 85% of the spread.
It's just that they really dropped off dramatically. I mean, even, you know, you'd expect your core blokes to be getting 20, but not 14 and 16. And certainly Young and Brayshaw certainly are that. It'll be interesting from our selection situation. We talked about they're three, or certainly two very big forwards and another one in Voss. Do we go the extra tall with T-Mac, who can also provide that backup ruck, or do we go for the Moose option? Don't quite know because they've got Darcy and Jackson. So I don't know that Max will be able to handle two good rucks, and they are both good rucks for the whole game. It's easy when you've only got a Tom De Koning to beak all on his own, but it'll be interesting with Darcy and Jackson. So we probably need someone else who can do that. Darcy's not greatly mobile, but he's a big unit. So maybe T-Max can fulfil that role. So it's a real selection dilemma that we've got. Against Fremantle, obviously they're at home and we're not. You know, that always seems to be some sort of factor. So we just have to wait and see. But it will give us a very good idea about where we sit in the competition, because I don't think up to this stage, with the practice games and even this game against St Kilda, I don't think we've got a good handle on where we are at compared to the rest of the competition.
Yeah, and I think in particular it will test our defence. because we'll turn it over pushing high up the ground, and we'll have to hightail it back when we turn it over and it gets out the back of our defense. St Kilda didn't really exploit that to the but not to the way they're so like all of those kicking, like they had so many more, like I forget at one stage, they had like 40 halfway through the second quarter, 40 or 50 more disposals than us, and it was almost all kicks. Frio, on the other hand, are very similar to the way they had the handballs, 148 handballs to 130 against Geelong. What was really interesting stat in that game was that they only had 40 to inside 50s. They only had 48 inside 50s, which is really low, you know, considering because they dominated in the first half. So they did fall away a fair bit in that second half in that game. It was a good game of footy, and they were certainly very impressive in that in that first half. But 46 to 60 inside 50s plus 14 Geelong were for inside 50s. That's pretty big for a game that was, you know, level, you know, for much of the second half.
All right. Well, I think we're going to leave it there. I'm very nervous about this week's game, but there's a lot to be excited about, and you know,
free hit, Andy.
The coach got an extra week of a grace period, so before the people turn on him. But it's good to see. Let's enjoy the ride. There's going to be bumps along the way. We're certainly you know, not expecting wins every week. I just want to see improvement and competitiveness, and that's all we can ask. So, as I said, we're going to leave it there tonight. We'll be back next week to break down that round two match against the Dockers. Look out for our extended Stats Files podcast in the coming days if you enjoy a deeper dive into the stats that matter. Thank you to our 5-star reviewer on Apple Podcasts. That was thank you to that Kevin Spencer. As always, your questions and comments are an integral part of the show. So thank you to the Demonland posters who submitted those questions and comments. Thank you to Smurf, Monocular, El Diablo 14, Singer, Dominion, Dice, Doug Reamer, Lazy, Sam 6172, What, Say What, Mandalorian, Watson 11, Bigfoot, Demon WA, Lefty, Master Chief, D Future 15, JN02, Red and Blue Beard, and Whispering Jack. And thank you to my co-hosts, George and B-Man. And thank you to you, our loyal listeners. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it out and give you that shout out on the show. Go Demons.
Red Leggers.
This heart.